and welcome to Community Outreach. I'm Raquel Williams. October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. And did you know that one in four women will actually experience domestic violence at some point in her life? And 99% of those victims will also suffer financial abuse. In fact, it's for financial reasons that a lot of women stay in abusive relationships. Joining us today is Kim Schooler. She is a financial industry executive and women's financial literacy advocate who wants women to know that they are not trapped. And you've got plenty of financial options for you. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thanks, Raquel. It's wonderful to be here.
This is a very interesting topic. Of course, we've spoken about domestic abuse several times and from different angles, but really never really got into the issue of financial abuse. And from what I've been reading, this is a very real issue that a lot of women are struggling with, and there are ways that they can get out of that. So let me first talk about the obvious. If you could, Kim, what exactly is financial abuse?
So at the root of domestic violence and financial abuse is the abuser's desire to exercise absolute control. And one of the main ways that they can exercise control, in addition to just physical strength, is financial control. And as you just mentioned, you know, every aspect of leaving an abusive situation involves money. And so many women report that they stay or go back to abusive situations because they're completely financially dependent on their abuser. And if they have children, it makes the situation even harder.
Yeah, I can definitely imagine that. What are some of the signs, Kim, that someone is in a financially abusive relationship?
So there are three different kinds of red flags that we advise women about. The first one is just financial control. Does your partner deny or limit your access to money? Does he keep you on a strict allowance? Does he deny you access to information about money, like your bank statements or pay stubs? Does he hide money from you? Or does he demand a detailed accounting of how you spend money? Maybe he criticizes your financial decisions, threatens to withhold money from you, or make financial decisions without consulting you. The second kind of red flags we point out to women is called employment or education sabotage. And this happens if your partner pressures you to miss or be late, or maybe quit your job or your school pursuits. Mm-hmm. Maybe he harasses you at work or at school, harasses your coworkers, maybe your bosses or your school friends, constantly belittling your work or school accomplishments, and then criticizing your career or school choices or goals. And in some instances, physically harming you to prevent you from going to work or school.
Wow. So it is 100%, just like physical abuse, all about having complete and total control.
Exactly. Now, the third kind of red flag that we talk to women about is, unfortunately, the long-lasting kind of financial abuse that so many continue to experience even after they leave the abusive relationship. And that's economic exploitation. Now, the questions to look at are, you know, does your partner withdraw money from your bank accounts without your knowledge? Maybe he's adding his name to your credit cards. Maybe he pays the mortgage or the rent or the bills late, or maybe he doesn't pay them at all. Or he runs up a lot of debt under your name, or takes out a first or second mortgage on your home and ends up ruining your credit score. So many women, once they leave these situations, Raquel, they end up with tax liens, bankruptcies, creditors, I mean, just hounded by bad credit and a low credit score for many years.
Wow, that's a mess. I want to go back to something that you said earlier and ask this question. You were talking about maybe hiding money. I'm thinking of perhaps giving an allowance or something, telling you how much you can spend, how much you can't spend, constantly monitoring what you're doing with money and telling you what to do with it. Now, what if this is a situation where the woman isn't working and there's only one breadwinner in the home? Would you say it's fair for the partner at that point, since they're the breadwinner, to dictate how the money is spent or what's happening with the money? Or is there room for financial abuse in that situation as well?
I think that couples should look at their relationship in terms of money as a partnership. One partner may be bringing the skill set of taking care of the home and raising the children and all of the things that that entails, while the other partner is working outside of the home and earning money from a third party or from a business. Both partners should be involved in the financial decisions, the financial information. They should work together as a team. Because if they don't, even in a healthy relationship, one partner may end up knowing everything about the finances and the other doesn't know anything about them. Whether that's, a willing decision or an unwilling decision, they are at a disadvantage. If something happens to the breadwinner, then what is that partner going to do? Or if something happens to their relationship and the partner that knows everything about the finances starts using that to control the other partner, that's just not a good situation to find yourself in. So on the financial end, even if one partner is bringing in more money because the other partner, they've made a decision together for the other partner to work from home, they should look at each other as equal partners in the financial relationship.
Now, that's good advice. If someone finds themselves in this situation and they'd like to start to talk about it, bringing it up to their partner and say, I know you've been handling all the money. I know you pay all the bills, but I'd like to be more involved in it. I guess it should give you pause if the partner then says, well, why would you want to do that? I have everything in control. You don't need to know what's going on in the background. So I guess starting to have the conversation would probably open up some windows as to what needs to happen next.
Well, exactly. And there is a way to open up the conversation without having the other partner feel defensive. If they do go defensive, then that might be a red flag you want to consider. Oftentimes, especially with young women, a little bit at a time, their partner takes control over the finances. And in the beginning, it's very innocuous and innocent. And it may even sound like your partner wants to take care of you. He wants to make these decisions. He wants to help you out. He wants to be the breadwinner. But if you don't actively participate, even the most innocuous and friendly of situations where it looks like he just wants to take care of me, ends up you being the controlled person and completely dependent on them. In a healthy relationship, there should not be this complete dependence, whether it's financially, emotionally, however, you all should be equal partners.
That's interesting because I'm sure in some situations, some backgrounds, some cultures, it's looked upon as okay, the man takes care of the woman and the family, and the woman doesn't get involved in, the finances, and that's that. But of course, you can see how that can get you into a problem. What if something happens to that person who's controlling everything? So yeah, that's
Exactly. There are great reasons for both people to know what's going on.
How many women, Kim, are experiencing this?
Well, as you mentioned at the beginning of the show, one in four women will be victims of domestic violence, and 99% of them are subject to financial abuse. But I believe that the numbers are much higher because I speak about this topic a lot. And so many times, women in the audience who never thought they were a victim or someone who's been the victim of domestic violence or financial abuse, it's like a light bulb goes off in her head about a present or a past relationship, and they realize, oh my goodness, you're talking about me.
Yeah. That's interesting. And you don't really know unless you start talking. And I say that about a lot of different topics, especially women. We're so good at keeping secrets and keeping things to ourselves. But if you start talking and having these conversations, you start to realize, wait a minute, you know, this is happening to me. This is happening to you. Is this happening to you? And it becomes something where you can, I guess, kind of glean from each other and perhaps help each other. But then at least you know that you're not alone and this is a problem that needs to be taken care of.
You're exactly right, Raquel.
Is society, Kim, aware of this problem on a broad scale? Because I have to tell you, when I heard about this, I said, wow, this is something I really haven't explored. Is society aware of this being a significant problem?
I really appreciate the times we're living in now. Things that women were too ashamed to talk about or bring to the attention of others are now coming out of the closet, and we're realizing, hey, this is not our fault, and hey, we have a voice here. I really feel like domestic violence and financial abuse is one of those things where all of the stigma and shame attached to it is kind of, you know, going away, and these women are truly being looked at as heroes for the strength they carry to get through these situations and to take care of their families in spite of the violence and abuse because they want to take care of their kids. So that's, I think, the message that we really want these women to understand. It's not your fault.
Right.
Don't be ashamed. Don't be embarrassed. Mm-hmm. Talk about it with your friends, because that's how we're going to shine a bright light on this problem, to find support, the resources out there to help each other and to, you know, bring ourselves out of the situation.
Okay.
But it's a terrible thing, but I really appreciate these times that we live in today, because we are shining a bright light on all of these taboo subjects.
Yeah. And it's important. And it's good that we are doing that. What advice and I know you touched on this earlier, but we can get further into it. What advice would you give new couples? New couples, you know, everything is rosy and wonderful at the start of any relationship. You don't even see red flags, even if they're there. But what advice would you give new couples when it comes to money, merging money? What's the conversations that need to take place, say, before a couple gets married in terms of what we're going to do with money?
Well, you know, it's interesting you ask that, because I think every person has a different perspective on money. And it's usually a perspective that we learned from our parents or whoever raised us. You know, some people are big spenders. Some people are hoarders. Some people are embarrassed about money. So I think the first thing to do is, as a new couple, talk to your partner about, how do you feel about money? What are your ambitions and goals with respect to money? And what goals do we have in common with respect to money? I think both people should bring a lot of respect to the table and just respect each other's perspective and come up with a plan to work together to achieve your common goals. As a financial professional, I work with a lot of couples, and, you know, that situation we talked about earlier, where one person knows everything about money and makes all the decisions, and the other person just kind of defers, doesn't want to know, or doesn't want to be involved. Both people need to actively be involved in learning about money and setting the goals for the couple, in making the decisions together. And you're going to disagree, and that's okay. Just be respectful.
In terms of accounts and merging money, what advice do you give couples in terms of, okay, we should have all joint accounts and we put everything in one account, or should there be a joint account and separate accounts? Do women particularly need to have their own side accounts, even if you're, you know, in a committed or a married relationship? How should that work?
You know, my view on that has changed since I was young and now decades later. I would recommend to a couple that they have a joint account where they run their household expenses and if they have children, all of the things that their children need. But I would also recommend that they each have individual accounts because you may have common financial goals, but you also may have individual goals. One person may want to go deep sea diving off of Fiji, and the other one might want to buy a fancy car.
Right, right.
And so I think that's healthy to have different individual goals as long as you're both working towards those common goals. So I recommend, as I said, my opinion has changed since I was in my 20s, that you should have a joint account, but each person should also have their own individual account.
Now, what was your previous thinking? Were you thinking everything separate or everything joint?
Everything together.
Everything together.
Everything joint. You know, when I first got married, it was, you know, we're in this together, and we are, but everything is joint. And it's not that that's not a good thing, but I think you should have individual goals. I don't think you and your partner are going to want or do all of the same things. I think it's healthy to have some separate interests or separate goals.
Right, right. Now, should those accounts be hidden or should it all be on the table? Here's what I have. I'm not hiding anything from you. Here's my my other account and here's this account. You can see everything. I'm not, you know, hoarding huge amounts of money away from our, you know, family goals. Should everything be on the table for everyone to see?
I think definitely everything should be on the table for everyone to see. I don't think you want to keep secrets. I think you want to take steps to foster trust among both people. But I don't know that I'd share passwords necessarily online. And since I do a lot of advising for women who are victims of domestic violence and starting their first bank accounts and credit card accounts and those kinds of things, I do counsel, you know, keep your passwords to yourself. I don't see any problem with keeping your password to yourself, but I do think you should be transparent about what your goal is and how you're setting money aside towards that goal and kind of what the balance looks like.
Has the pandemic, Kim, exacerbated this whole situation at all as it has physical abuse? I know that physical abuse has been an issue during the pandemic, but financial abuse, this is also a situation that's become worse as well?
It truly has. It's so unfortunate, you know, in this horrible time we live in, that it's exacerbated the problem with domestic violence and financial abuse, which state to state is up somewhere between 10 and 30%, depending on what state you're in. But I mean, think about it. During the shutdowns, people were forced to stay at home. People lost their jobs or lost time at work, so they weren't being paid. They were facing eviction or having their utilities cut off. So there was a tremendous amount of financial pressure put on struggling families and families who maybe hadn't seen themselves as struggling pre-pandemic. You add to that having the children at home because the schools are closed and, all of this, you know, additional activity and additional responsibility at home. And it just is like a perfect storm for an abuser or a potential abuser. As I mentioned at the beginning, at the heart of abuse or at the root of abuse is this need to control. And the pandemic has shown us how little we can control in our lives. And that's made abusers or people who lean towards abuse to want to exercise even more control. So it's just made the situation a whole lot worse for victims and potential victims.
Mm-hmm. Where do you think financial literacy begins, or where should it actually begin?
Well, I wish it began in schools, but unfortunately, people aren't taught about personal finance even in high school. And to get it in college, you actually have to sign up for a personal finance course, and then it's maybe only one semester. But knowing the basic principles of personal finance and knowing what the components are of a solid financial plan, whether you've got a little bit of money or a lot of money, is so important. And it's not rocket science. You just have to learn the basics. So there are a lot of resources out there, Raquel, online, programs like this. Books you can buy online or in the bookstore about just basic personal finance principles. And then start applying them to your life. Mm-hmm. And little by little, you will build a solid financial plan for yourself and create a solid financial future for you and your family.
I know some people might be listening, women might be listening saying, okay, what do I need to do as far as what I should have in my financial war chest? I have a limited amount of money and lots of bills. So where is it? There's not a lot left over to manage. What would you say are the basic tools that women need to have in their financial war chest, regardless of how much money they're making?
So I usually start out by advising people that knowledge is power. And oftentimes, we don't look at the credit card statements, or we don't look at our pay stub, or we don't look at our bank statements or 401k with any kind of scrutiny. But knowledge is power, and get it out and learn what's going on in your own personal financial accounts, if you have any, what's going on at your bank, and what's going on in your pay stub. Now, basically, there's so much money that comes into your household and so much money that's leaving your household. Understand exactly what those numbers are and what the difference is. If more is coming into your household than is going out, then that difference is what you should be setting aside. If less money is coming into your household than is going out, then you've got to make an adjustment. You've got to find a way to bring more money into your household and reduce the money leaving your household. And there are different ways to do that, you know, looking at consolidating debts or looking at paying down your debts one debt at a time, looking for one of those side gigs, you know, maybe it's a ride share or DoorDash or some other way that you can make money on the side. One thing that I recommend for women, especially women who are raising children, is look at starting your own business. If you can start your own business, there are so many ways online to make that easy and inexpensive. That's a great way to bring more money into your household without having to put a lot of money out of your pocket to start it.
Good advice. Kim, if you could, finally, just share a story of a client or someone you know, nameless, of course, who has been through this situation. They were in a financially abusive situation. They got out of it, and they're left with bad credit or no credit or lots of debt, and they were able to rebuild. Do you know a story of that like that you can share with us?
You know, Raquel, I know so many stories like that, unfortunately. But most of the stories I know have really great endings. But there is this incredible woman. She's a very dear friend of mine and business colleague. Her name is Andrea, and she lives in Macon, Georgia. She was the victim of horrific domestic violence and financial abuse. She continued to work nonstop to bring money into the household and came home after a hard day working just to be beat up in front of her incredible step sign.
Oh my gosh.
She finally got up the courage to leave that situation, and she stayed in it longer than she would have.
Mm-hmm.
But there was the stepson, and she had no legal rights to protect him. So she stayed in the relationship as long as she could to protect him.
Wow.
And then she got the courage to leave. She packed her bags, and she lived out of her car for about a week because she had no money to get a hotel room. And she was too embarrassed and ashamed to call anyone and ask for help.
Wow.
Now, Andrea, she works a full-time job. She also is this amazing advocate for other victims of domestic violence to help them become survivors and thrivers. She does amazing work in Macon, Georgia, and it is just a blessing to me that she's my friend and I get to know her. But I'm actually doing an interview with her soon for a podcast, and I asked her, she told her story by podcast last year, this time last year, because it being Domestic Violence Awareness Month. She had never told her story on the record before because she'd never told her stepson. So she told her stepson and she told her story on video.
Mm-hmm.
And she's coming back to do an interview, and her stepson is going to join her because I think it's so important for victims to see that the children survive.
Mm-hmm.
The children are stronger. And they recognize the strength and courage that their mothers or stepmothers showed in the face of just absolute adversity.
Wow. Wow. What an incredible story. And of course, with the work you do, you hear story upon story upon story. And I'm sure one is just worse than the other. But how resilient are we? We are definitely resilient. Women are incredibly resilient, I have to say.
Women are absolutely amazing. I don't think anything would get done without women. You know, one more thing that I'd mention, Raquel, mm-hmm. is it's not a stereotypical woman who's going to end up in this situation. I've seen this situation and heard the stories from young women to older women to women with no money to women with very high power jobs or very wealthy women. There is no kind of stereotype of who's going to end up being the victim of this, but there is hope and there is support, and women, we can accomplish everything.
Kim, give us your information for those who are listening and would like to get in contact with you, or perhaps visit a website where we can read a little bit more about this topic and find out more of the advice that you're giving. Where could people find you?
Let me give you my email address first. It's kim.scoullr@wealthwave.com. You can also find my website, which is howmoneyworks.com/kimschooler, KIMSCOULLER. And just one more thing, Raquel,
mm-hmm.
if you are a victim of domestic violence, I encourage you to call the National Domestic Violence Hotline. And that number is 1-800-799-7233.
We've been talking with Kim Schooler, a financial industry executive and women's financial literacy advocate. We've been talking about domestic abuse, in particular financial abuse when it comes to women. October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and this is just another issue that women need to be aware of. Everyone should be aware of this. Kim Schooler, thank you so much for your time. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks, Raquel. This is wonderful.